Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us. Bayard Rustin was an openly gay civil rights activist, pacifist, and advisor to the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. While Rustin is best known for being the principal organizer of the 1963 March on Washington, where King delivered his Eye of a Dream speech, Rustin played an active, though often quiet, role in nonviolent civil rights activism. Now, 60 years after the March on Washington, Rustin's activism and legacy, often produced behind the scenes due to his sexuality, have been highlighted in a new film starring Emmy Award-winning actor Coleman Domingo. Let's listen to this selection from the Netflix streaming film Rustin. Ahead of that monumental march on Washington, Rustin tells Dr. King that he won't resign.
Each of us are taught in ways both cunning and cruel that we are inadequate, incomplete. And the easiest way to combat that feeling of not being enough is to find someone we consider less than. Less than because they are poorer than us, or because they are darker than us, or because they desire someone. Our churches and our laws say they should not desire. When we tell ourselves such lies, start to live and believe such lies, we do the work of our oppressors by oppressing ourselves.
That's Coleman Domingo as Bayard Rustin in the Netflix film Rustin. Coleman, so good to have you with us today on Film Week.
Oh, so good to be here. Hello.
What is it like to hear yourself in all these clips with the interviews that you're doing? Does it take you back to when you were actually doing the scene?
It does. There's an emotional response immediately because your body recalls those moments, actually. And also, I don't sound like myself because I placed Bayard's voice higher. His voice was maybe three pitches higher than my own natural speaking voice. And he had a bit of a flourish of an accent, of a mid-Atlantic standard accent of sorts. So it does. It does take, it lands you back into those moments because your body, it holds it. It holds everything. Those words, those moments that were detailed and carefully etched out, and then you gave a part of yourself to it. So I do feel, I get emotional when I hear it, and it's different than watching it. I don't know what that is.
Audio, yeah. I think, and this is why I love radio, there is an intimacy that comes to it, I think, without the distraction of the visual. So I actually get that, why it would have that impact on you. How long did it take you to find his voice?
It took me about 5.5 months of prep before I started production. And as I was researching him, you know, in his interviews, he sounded different in every interview. Sometimes he had a beautiful tenor singing voice, and then he also he played the lute, so he had this sort of melodic way of phrasing things, and he was a lover of language, so he sort of knew how to chew on language. But in his interviews and his debates and whatever research that I could find, he spoke differently. Sometimes it had a bit more of a Katharine Hepburn-esque feel to the way he spoke. Other times a bit more British and RP in a way. And I would try to dissect that because that's part of character. You're like, what are these choices that he's making? And also he had a slight lisp because also he had like three teeth that were knocked out through a moment with the authorities in like the 1942. So to find all of that is all part of character and layering in his character and how he comes across to people. So I asked Rochelle Horowitz, who was one of his dear friends who's depicted in the film, who actually organized transportation for the March on Washington. I said, well, what was this accent? Because he's from Westchester, Pennsylvania. I'm from Philadelphia. I'm like, I know how we speak.
Yeah.
And he said, well, he made that up. He made it up for a couple of reasons. One is that he had a speech impediment. He had a stutter. And so he would learn to wrap his mouth and teeth around language. And I understood that because I had a slight lisp growing up. It comes out here and there. And I had to learn how to dentalize and had speech therapy to actually. But I think it something about that gives you more love of language and how to use it and let that be a useful tool. So that took some months in tuning and finding. And then I also find you also find with the voice, you find the body. Because it all works in concert.
So that means your stance, how your arms move, the pace when you walk, all of those things you have to, and how much of that do you feel like has to be authentic to the way Rustin himself moved, or how much of it license can you take?
You have to take some theatrical license with things. Like to sustain for this film, there was no way. Like Byard's voice, I can start to bring it up because I'll bring it up in rehearsal. I'll bring it up because I sort of pitched his voice a bit more up here. He naturally spoke a bit more up here. He would constantly flourish his voice up here. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot. And it sounds like a caricature in a way. And so for film, we wanted to find this middle ground of really making it sustainable and making sure that he used his voice as a tool in different scenes. So let's say there's a scene with me standing in front of members of the NAACP. And he's trying to conform and be like the rest of the guys. I think that there are times when he's trying to overtake the room, so he'll use a bit more flourish with it. Or he's trying to become more one of them and conform, so he would take some of the accent off. So I would make these choices per room. And then sometimes it would completely go away when he's being vulnerable. So I thought that was a useful tool. And how do you build character and, you know, make sure that it's, I don't know, helping the narrative of a film.
All these layers, Coleman, that you are playing in his life, to me are so impressive because we see him trying to deal with his anger and how he manages it. And, of course, he speaks explicitly of that as well. But the way you inhabit that, how you show that physically, or these different aspects of him where he's trying, as you said, to dominate the room or trying to intellectually manhandle someone because he has the capacity to do that.
Absolutely.
He's so gifted with words. He's so smart that you see that. And is this all part of that 5-month process as well to discover the layers of the character and figure out how you embody that?
There's so much that I need to put into my toolkit, actually, so that I'm able to inhabit the space and then let that alchemy happen with the rest of my company. Because then there's the layers of costume and design. And also, you know, I'm one of those actors, I always say that I prepare as much as I prepare when it comes to knowing backstory, knowing what I'm doing the moment before, having detail of not only what's in our script, but what's around our script in 1963, what music was playing on the radio, what was he eating. I make all these decisions, and I sort of download all this information into my body and to physicality. And then hopefully I don't like it to be almost like heady about it. I feel like I just need to let it live and breathe and find its way. So I think that's part of the process. And then I always say that, like, yes, I know my lines, I know the beats, I know what the scene is, but there's an element that I don't know, which is, how is this being staged? Where are cameras coming from? My fellow actor, what are they bringing? I'm not that performer that has crafted the full performance, because I'm like, I need those elements of collaboration to come in effect. And that's the magic where I think the divine resides in performance.
You've worked with George C. Wolfe before for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. He, of course, a stage director as well as a film director.
Yes.
And him having that experience, stage so much in actors' medium, do you think that affects the way that he directs actors in film?
Absolutely.
I think
that is actually one of George's strengths as an actor. As a director, he's absolutely an actor's director. He calls a private rehearsal, which I truly appreciate, and any other actor would too. And it's private. It's not, you know, you go on some sets and they say it's a private rehearsal, but your DP's there and the first AD. This is private. This is just with actors and the director. And so he makes sure that you're liberated in every single way, that you can make mistakes, that you can find your way. You know, even on the day, every single day I had rehearsal before every scene.
That's incredibly rare in
before
film.
And even if it only took, it could take no more than maybe, sometimes it could take 20 minutes if it was a heavy duty scene with a lot of cast members. But it can also just take 10 minutes of like going through the beats of it and making some decisions to liberate yourself and to be free in the scene. You know, it's not locking it in of what it is. It's just, hey, making some agreements on what the color and the timbre of the scene is, so we can go far and wide.
It's exciting hearing about it. I can only imagine for yourself as an actor, having the opportunity to really bring your very best, having the opportunity to spend the time with a character that you had with this. And
this was that rare opportunity where I was able to not only bring everything that I could possibly bring as an actor. These are those roles that come along once in a lifetime. Let's just be honest. And you know it's seismic. I'm in pretty much every frame of this film. And also I have to lead the film. I have to be the soul of the film and the production. So, but I knew that I needed, 33 years of experience, whether it's film and off-Broadway, you name it, to bring to this. And I'm also a director and a writer. So I knew it was calling on everything that I do to actually craft a character like this and also to lead a set, which is about one of my personal heroes.
We'll continue our conversation with actor, playwright, and director Coleman Domingo, who stars as Bayard Rustin in the biopic that is streaming on Netflix. It's an incredible cast as well, including Audra McDonald, Chris Rock, Glenn Turman, so many others. We mentioned George C. Wolfe directing from the screenplay by Julian Breese and Dustin Lance Black. We'll continue our conversation with Coleman Domingo on Film Week in just 1 minute.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle, enjoying our conversation with Coleman Domingo, tremendous actor and great buzz around his performance, which if you've seen Rustin on Netflix, you understand why, as he truly inhabits Bayard Rustin, who was an openly gay civil rights activist, pacifist, advisor to Dr. King, and the principal organizer of the 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. You mentioned before the break, Coleman, that this is the role of a lifetime for an actor, but you're also playing a very important historic figure, a very nuanced person, a lot of complexity in his life externally and internally. So how daunting was that? As excited as you must have been to, you know, get cast in this, was it scary?
Immediately, there's a level of terror that overtakes you. And then hopefully there was that other small voice inside me that said, there's no time for terror. You just have to get to work. And so I pride myself on having an arduous rehearsal process that I even have for myself, because I think I'd like to know as much as possible. I know actors who want to be a bit more raw in that way, but I feel like I can only be raw and open and vulnerable when I have so much history underneath me and so much knowledge and so many choices that I've made. And then that helps free me, because then I can play every single note of the character. For me, it's just been a part of my process. I feel like that helps me be completely open and vulnerable, because I know it's all downloaded inside of me in some way. So I just did the work. And I think that, you know, I always have to go back, because, you know, you always have that little voice, that other little voice in your shoulder saying, oh my God, how are you going to learn that? How are you going to learn these long, intense scenes with monologues that are huge and seismic and have so many beats within them? And then I think I have to always go back to my theater roots. You know, I've done plays with Otho Fugard and August Wilson and lots of Shakespeare. And I have to remind myself that you can do it. You just have to do what's in front of you. Take one word at a time, one beat at a time, one moment at a time, and build the character that way. And that way the character will be organic. And at some point, I can recede, and the other character sort of takes over, and that's the beauty.
And I'm sure this evolves over time, but did you have periods along the way where it just sort of clicked in? You just felt like that's it, whether it's the voice or whether it's the vulnerability. This is what I was going for.
I think when I found his fuel, if that makes sense, he has, even when I've witnessed the film, I see something, I see a spark and a fire in his eyes that I think that's the thing that I found, what got him up every day. There's a line in our film towards the end that Dr. Anna Hedgman says, played by CCH Pounder. She says, "Have you made yourself useful today?" And I put that at the top of my script, and I made sure that that was part of his own mission of being in service every day and being in service in every scene. So I think once I found that part of his engine, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. of being in service. So he's in service to the scene in some way, shape, or form, and to people, and to charging someone to do something, or young people, or whatever he was in a scene, he was trying to make himself useful in some way. And then there are times when you would see that light dim, when there would be a huge cloud that overshadows him, which would upend any of his service and his work, whether it's from rumor or hearsay or his livelihood of being openly gay or, you know, being in spaces that were not welcoming of him in many ways. Then when I would see that light go out of his eyes, that's when I knew that I had it, when I felt his spark.
This movie is obviously important because it gives due to someone who deserves it. But it seems to me that there's more importance in it than that, because it includes someone who doesn't fit the stereotype of people leading the movement. And so from your perspective, what is the meaningful of this, even beyond Bayard Rustin's legacy?
I think that we have a great question, I think, that we're all wrestling with now in our culture about history and who gets the lights shined on them in history, and then who gets marginalized. How do we interpret history? How do we erase history? That's a complicated thing that we're all dealing with, I think. You know, as book bans are happening and legislation's threatening to send us back to 1963, it is important to know these unsung human beings that were ordinary human beings doing something extraordinary. Just doing what was in front of them that was right, and being in service to the betterment of our country, a betterment of our humanity, and to each other. I think that that is the significance of this film and the importance of this film, especially now. It's a clarion call. It's a clarion call to rouse people to believe that they can take part in their democracy and in the world that they want it to be. We're fighting. We're all trying to fight darkness together. These aren't unusual dark times. These are our dark times. You know, that's what I'm viewing it as right now. It's like, you know, we don't know how to have conversations. We don't know how to invite everyone to have with their fullest self to be validated in a room. And Bayard Rustin is truly that North Star for me. He was always moving in spaces that were not welcoming to him and finding his way. And as our tagline for the film says, owning your power.
Coleman Domingo with us, portraying Bayard Rustin in the film Rustin, that's streaming on Netflix. I just want to close with a personal reflection about the film. One of the things that impressed me so much about your performance is I really felt like you brought me in as a viewer. Like there is an openness to this character, which often, you know, the great people of history sort of thing, you look at them from afar and say, wow, what a wonderful person. You really bring the viewer in to feel like we have a stake in what happens to him. And I almost felt protective of him at times in the movie. And that's a very powerful emotion to elicit in a viewer of a film. So I want to close just by congratulating you doing what is a very difficult thing as an actor to do. That's very complex, very deep work as an actor, and you did it.
Oh, thank you so much. It was my honor, my tremendous honor, to give any life and heart to Bayard Rustin. And I think it required an incredible amount of vulnerability and openness.
Did it change you as a person at all? I mean, you've done a lot of acting over the years, but did this role affect you personally?
Yes, It has, and I think it's still changing me. It's I've dedicated my career to different narratives and portrayals of black men that I think that's important, of how we can deconstruct and rethink the way the world sees us and all of our humanity. That's very important to me. And I think that I'm doubling down on that, I think, in terms of understanding that what I have been doing is dedicating my life to service with this medium that I have of telling these complex stories about who we are and being an archivist for that.
And you're only going to have a higher profile from the response to this film. I think that's very safe to say. Coleman Domingo, thank you for being with us. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Wonderful performance as Bayard Rustin in the Netflix streaming biopic Rustin. It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. For our critics, I'm Larry Mantle. Have a wonderful weekend.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.